Welcome, everyone. This is the Real Estate Council Committee of the Finance and Governance. My name is Zach Edan, and I have my colleagues, Council Member Cynthia De Las Runas Johnson and Kathy Holderty. We have three business agenda items. The first one is early learning facilities, impact fee waivers. Mr. Miles, please take it away.
Thank you. For the record, Brandon Miles, Economic Development. And so what we have tonight, staff is looking for input from the committee regarding impact fees for early learning facilities. In tonight's discussion, you may hear me refer to early learning facilities as a daycare or child care. It's a little less of a tongue tie to say daycare or child care. If I say that, I mean the same thing. So specifically, what we're looking for is input from the committee on staff's recommendation to reduce up to 80% of the charged impact fees for early learning facilities as permitted by recently adopted state legislation that will go into effect on July 25th. So just a real high level review of impact fees, just so that everyone has an understanding of how they work and what they are. The city collects transportation, park, and fire impact fees from certain eligible development projects within the city. We do not have a school impact fee. Development impact fees are envisioned as a way that growth pays for growth. As the city grows and more people and businesses choose to call it home, more city facilities and capital is needed to support that growth. Impact fees can only be used for capital investments, new facilities, new infrastructure, new vehicles. It cannot be used to, they cannot be used for operations. Park and fire impact fees are calculated very simply. You take the user per square foot and multiply by a rate for either office, retail, industrial, or housing, or the number of housing units. Traffic impact fees are calculated by applying a specific ratio. Our ordinance has about over four dozen specific uses and ratios that we use to calculate traffic impact fees. But basically, the big thing is that PM peak hour. So between the hours of 4 and 6 is what we call the PM peak. And we charge based upon uses that have a high demand get charged, a high PM peak get charged a higher rate than, say, a use that has a lower PM peak. Traffic impact fees charged to daycares are high because that a daycare peaks during that 4 to 6 hour window, the peak PM peak. If you think about it, that's how daycare operates, right? Parents come and pick up their children usually between 4 and 6. In the TIB area, a daycare pays about $59.49 per square foot in traffic impact fees. This is a higher rate per square foot than a sit-down restaurant, a supermarket, or a discount club, say a Costco. On page 2 of your packet, you'll see a rough estimate for the impact fees due for a 2,000 square foot space on Tukwila International Boulevard. As you can see, an early learning child facility compared to office or retail generates a significant higher impact fee that's owing at the time of building permit. And that high amount is generated really from the traffic impact fee. I want to clarify that this estimate is not giving any credit for previous use or any studies that the applicant might provide to help reduce those impacts. It's simply being provided as a way to have comparison between the various uses. We often get asked a question, can we waive impact fees for specific uses? And the answer is, only if there's a public benefit, and only if the city were to make up the lost revenue from the impact fee with another source, typically the general fund. So if we waive an impact fee for someone or exempt an impact fee for someone, we have to make it up through another source of funds. In the last legislative session, the state legislature, and it was signed into law, passed Substitute House Bill 1331. With the express intent to expand the number of early learning facilities in the state. Other organizations have expressed the importance of early learning facilities. For example, as part of the May 2020 report, Partners for Prosperity, The Greater Seattle Partners noted that a lack of affordable child care in low-income communities in King County impacts the abilities of community members to access high-paying jobs or to start and run their own businesses. And these impacts are disproportionately impact women, specifically women of color, hindering their ability to generate generational wealth. So what Substitute House Bill 1331 does is it actually provides an avenue for cities to exempt impact fees. And there are three options that are available to the city. These are discretionary. The city does not have to adopt these if we do not want to. But we wanted to bring this to the committee's attention in case we wanted to, and staff is recommending. So first is the city could choose to exempt up to 80% of the required impact fees for early learning facilities. If the exemption is no more than 80%, there is no requirement for the city to make up that exempt impact fee with general fund dollars. I spoke earlier about how if we did that, we had to make it up. But the House bill goes and says, cities, if you want to go up to 80%, you can do it, and you don't have to make it up. The city could also exempt more than 80% of the impact fee, provided the city pays that exempt portion above the 80% from public funds. And it would most likely have to be from our general fund. The bill also allows the city could exempt over 80% of the impact fees without having to pay any amount from public sources, provided the property owner receiving the exemption records a covenant against the property. And in my staff report, I outlined the requirements that the state law specifies have to be in those covenants. Staff recommends that we do the 80%. And one of our main reasons for the 80% is I don't think a lot of people would want to actually take advantage of the 100% where there is the requirement for the covenant. I don't think a property owner wants to do it for something that benefits his tenant. And that second option of the city making up the revenue, I don't think it's realistic given our current budget situation to make up that amount with the general fund. I think there would be interest in there would be interest in doing that 80% for child care facilities. We do have, so what we're asking for tonight is to get input from the committee, and we would like to draft an ordinance that reflects the committee's input and take it to the July 26th committee of the whole meeting. The reason we're asking to take the ordinance straight to COW is because we do have an individual who is interested in doing a daycare facility and wants to see what happens with this ordinance before they pull their permit. He would like to be able to start his project in August. I do want to conclude with one last kind of comment. There is a thought process, if you look at my staff report, that someone could go and say, well, aren't we losing revenue if a daycare is required to pay $100,000 of impact fees, and we were going to waive $80,000 of that, where we only collect $20,000. Haven't we lost that $80,000? And my response to that is that assumes that we would get the child care facility anyway, and that the child care facility is not actually priced out of the market. If it's too high of a fee, we could actually see daycares not locate unless we actually don't get any fee from them when they were to decide to operate in the community. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions the committee might have, and staff is looking for some direction on a possible ordinance.
Thank you.
I think Derek actually has something as well.
Did you want to add something before? Yeah, go ahead, please.
Yeah, thank you. Just a real quick add on to what Brandon said. I just want to, I do want to make sure, because we had some staff that asked questions about losing that revenue that Brandon talked about. And we had some other staff that wanted everybody to know that the reason we charge impact fees is because there are projects that transportation needs and other capital facilities to do these projects. So we wanted you to know we're not trying to say there are no traffic impacts. So early learning facilities do come with them traffic impacts. So we really want the council to make that decision in that knowledge of those impacts, though, are they worth it in order to help those types of businesses open? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your comment, okay. So council members, Kathy, if you have comments, questions, and then the recommendation as to just needs to be forwarded. You can comment on that, your support or not.
Okay, thank you. So the first, I do have comments about this, and the first one is that under discussion is talking about the GSP report, talking about access to childcare is what it was called in that report, is a barrier for women for their job, especially women, parents. But a lot of times it's a woman, especially women of color, hindering them to be able to have jobs that are higher paying jobs that might demand more or need hours, more hours. And I was I am on the GSP board, so I was part of that particular subgroup, and we really talked about the importance of being able to have childcare facilities, and I'm sure that my fellow committee members are very aware of that. So I am in support of the lowering the fees, absolutely, and it's all in the how. So I had a couple comments about that. One is, if you look on page 2, it talks about exempting over 80% of the impact fee, as long as there's qualification that 25% of the children and families are subsidized, qualify, et cetera. And I'm not in support of that. First of all, paperwork for the staff. But secondly, having been a single mom with a kid and doing childcare, if you're $50 or $100 over that particular threshold, and then you have a daycare that says, I'm sorry, I can't take you because I have to maintain a certain percentage. That's really a barrier right there. And a lot of people are just sort of hovering around that threshold. So I don't like option 3 for that reason, and also because it's just a lot of red tape. So then the question is, should we do option 2 where we can say, okay, you only have to pay 20% of the impact fees, and then the city carries no burden with that, or should we say even 20 or even less of that impact fee with the city carrying the burden for that amount, 20 of which would be, in this particular example, $26,000? And I don't know the answer to that question because I need a little bit more information. And the piece of information that I would like to know is that in this particular example, where somebody's building a 2,000 square foot development within that neighborhood, what would that typically cost? So is $26,000 like just 2% of the total cost? Or is it like 50%? Is it going to be the thing that even the 20%, is that putting them over the edge or not? And if it's just a small percentage of the actual fees, then I say, yeah, let's do the 80%. But if it is really a barrier and a high percentage of the cost, then let's keep talking. Those are my thoughts. And Brandon, you're back on. Did you have some remarks about that?
Well, I wanted to, you asked an interesting question, and I actually do have a response. So most of the time, what we would see with a lot of daycares is this is not going to be new construction. It's going to be a tenant improvement for an existing space. And so there is a business that wants to go in up at TIB, and they submitted their building permit, and they are, since it's a TI, they're required to give us a cost estimate for their work. So this is the work that they are doing themselves. And that cost estimate was $35,000.
So if you don't mind, Zach, I want to do a follow-up question. So thank you. So, but this, so for this particular, you're using an example of the tenant that's looking at the space, correct? So they, and,
correct.
And how many square feet is that space?
It's approximately 2,000. So the example that you see is kind of using that tenant as the test case. So you can work off those numbers that are in my staff report and get an understanding of the impact fees that would be due from them as part of this project.
Okay, so I just have one more follow-up. So you're saying that this tenant is looking to provide a service that's very needed for the community, and that the initial investment is $36,000 plus $26,000 in impact fee and whatever else, right? So it would be a high percentage of the cost. And basically, if the city does say, okay, we're going to bring those impact fees down to zero, let's say, just to make it easy. Okay, so the city carries the burden of the $26,000. But really what they're doing is they're transferring that money into another fund. We're not really losing the money. It's going into the our impact fee fund. Is that true?
Right. Right, but the city would have to identify where those that money has to be transferred from the general fund. And that has to be, you know, that so that's $26,000 that comes out of the general fund and goes into the impact fee fund. And so that's money that while it stays with the city, it now has a very restricted use in how it can be used.
Yes, and I understand that. So this is really a good question about benefits and how to do this. What's the general, okay, just a couple more questions, bear with me with this. So what's our general fund amount? I can't remember. So what's the overall percentage of the general fund that 26,000 would be?
I don't have that information. I can look into it.
All right, because I tend to think that we probably maybe might get four daycares a year. I'm just guessing. So this would be like $100,000 maybe that we would have to transfer into a different fund that has a specific use. So I have more questions, but I'm in favor of this, but just the details of the how is I need a little bit more information.
No, sorry.
Derek, did you have a question or a follow-up?
Well, a follow-up to that question. What Brandon said is absolutely correct about those costs you just talked about. The one thing is, if it's a new facility, then the traffic impact fee costs will be a lot less because it's a new facility. So, for instance, we know that there's a nonprofit right now that wants to build an early learning facility in Tukwila up in that neighborhood. That would be a new facility that would be more of like a multi-million-dollar facility. So in their case, the $26,000, if it were the same size, would be a much smaller percentage than a tenant improvement. I just want you to have all the information, that's all.
Okay, so I'm still thinking about this, and so I'll yield back. But I'm in favor of the reduction. It's just the how. So there you go.
Yes, good questions and comments, Kathy. So we'll go to Cynthia. Go ahead, please.
My computer's making. Sorry about the extra sound on my computer. I just want to say I appreciate all of Kathy's questions. I think my thoughts are aligned with where she's going with this in terms of the two, like really those two options in terms of the 80% or, you know, possibly thinking about the 100%. And my line of thinking was also, is the 80% still not enough to encourage the building or, you know, having these early childhood centers open in our community, which we all can agree are really important. I don't know whether I'm supportive of moving this forward. But I do think that when we bring it back, when we bring it to the COW, it would be great to have more information about, whether that 26, I'm just going off of the numbers you gave, whether that 26,000 is still cost prohibitive for somebody who wants to open an early childhood learning center. And in that case, I would be open to considering us funding that additional amount from the general fund. And, you know, one of the resources, at least in this moment that I'm thinking about, are the ARPA funds, because this, you know, opening up early, these, I'll just call them childhood, what is it, daycare, I'll just call daycare, it's just earlier to refer to it as daycare, but opening up more daycare facilities does help people go back to work, which is something that is, you know, the result of COVID. So at least for the first 2 years changing the ordinance around this, changing the impact fees, it's possible that we could use some of the funding from ARPA to fund this. So then we get a better understanding of what the budget impact is going to be and how successful this program is for future years when we do the budget. So there's that consideration in terms of, you know, where are we going to get the money if we do determine it is cost prohibitive for some people to open those businesses, then that could be sort of like a test to see how that would work. I have a couple of other questions. Sorry, I wrote it down on my chart thing. So is the South area zoned for child care centers? I don't know if there's any in the South Center area.
Yes, the South Center area allows it. I think you're right. I do not know if there's a current child care facility south of 405, but the zoning does allow it.
Okay. And then how are our impact fees for child care centers in comparison to other cities? Or is it around the same?
I that's a good question. I did pull that information when we were doing our research a couple months ago. We did our research before we realized that this House bill had been enacted because we were trying to see what we could do with them. Let me pull that and I can get that information. I believe in most cases we are about kind of in the range of other communities that do it. Now, impact fees mostly traffic impact fees can get very complicated in how they're calculated based upon how you do it. Some communities don't use that PM peak, and that's what really hurts daycares. However, making that change is bigger than just daycares. So I can get you the information regarding what other communities do.
I think that would be helpful for like when it goes to COW. I want to say thank you for bringing this issue to our attention, and thank you for highlighting areas of equity in your memo. I thought it was really good, and so I just want to give you kudos. for that. And then, sorry, I had one more question. Actually, that's it. If I remember, I'll ask it again, but thank you.
All right, thank you, council members. I also very supportive of the option that was outlined in the memo. I thought the memo was a really good memo. It gives you all sides of the issue, captures it very well. So I wanted to ask you a question in regards to the zoning. So the example you use is zone 3. Where is that at? Like, how many zones do we have?
So the traffic impact ordinance has 4 zones, I believe. Hang on, I actually have it up. No, I closed it. I believe there's 4 zones. I don't know. I know that TIB is zone 3.
Okay, so how about if it was in an urban avenue? Would that be a different calculation based on this example? If that was a different zone, I assume that would be a different zone.
It would. It wouldn't be a huge difference. I mean, we're not talking massive, huge variations, but it would be somewhat different.
The other question, I just had a clarifying question. Option one, and I think you're recommending option 2, and I'm right with that. Option 1, if the state enacted this bill, can we still choose option 1? I'm just trying to get a clarification around that.
Option 1 is the do nothing?
Yes.
Yeah, so the what we've presented to the committee are discretionary things that the bill allows. So there's one part of the bill that we have to comply with regarding how we interpret the application of the impact fees. we didn't spend a lot of time on that because we believe we're in compliance with that requirement. The 80% is a it's for cities have that option. You don't have to do it. The cities can choose to do it if they want. And so it's completely discretionary. If we want to do it, we would have to adopt an ordinance.
Okay. Yeah, I thought the you know, do nothing option was not an option per the state law, but thank you for that clarification. And lastly, you brought this item to this committee, and I was kind of like, why is it coming to this particular committee versus going to, I don't know, the community development committee? Can you respond to that?
So that was a question that we asked because, of course, impact fees, there's three impact fees, right? Transportation, parks, and fire. So all three of those touch a different committee. And so we chose the committee that touches, that is finance, right? Touching the financial committee, since it has oversight over all the financial stuff.
Okay. Sounds good. I don't have any other questions or comments. I heard all of us support moving this forward. So thank you for coming through tonight.
So if I could just ask a clarification, what I would like to do is to draft an ordinance for the 80%, and we can include and we can also include in there 100% as well, and then have that discussion at the COW meeting, and then COW can give us direction about what they want in the final ordinance. Is that a fair kind of, is that a good process?
So I see all head nods, so I think that is a good process. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, so let's move on to item 1B, City Council onboarding. Laurel, you're up.
Thank you, Council Member. So I'm here tonight to talk about onboarding new council members. This topic came up briefly during your review of the council rules update, and I suggested to Council Member Yadon at that time that I return with a discussion just about this. As you all know, there's a very steep learning curve associated with being a council member, and we have at least two new council members coming on board in January. And so I was really hoping to get some feedback on the process and any suggested improvements. So since I've been with the city, I've onboarded three council members, which is McLeod, Yadon, and Delestrinas Johnson. And I'm not aware that there was an organized process that existed before. There may have been, but I never came across it. And so I started from scratch, first by writing down everything I could think of, which ended up being the checklist that is in your packet. And then with each new council member, I made changes and improvements based on what I thought. So I have a few additional changes I'd like to implement for next year, and I'm seeking your feedback overall. New council members are provided copies of the current budget and capital improvement program, a resource book that I create based on current reference material, and a city administration onboarding book that goes into detail about city departments and boards and commissions. One thing I'd like to do for next year is to make a SharePoint page so all the information is electronic, and then I would print on request rather than, you know, giving paper by default. So just referencing the packet on page 11, this kind of is that checklist I talked about. I organized it by category as far as the material that is handed out, the technology options that you may choose, an HR orientation. There are a couple of legally required trainings on the Open Public Meetings Act and Public Records Act, and then the City Council's ethics policy. Meetings, I like to have the first meeting to just give an overview, and then we arrange meetings with the mayor, city administrator, and all the department heads. And for next year, I'd like to add city attorney meeting. I'm not sure that was consistently done. And it, I know that came up during the council rules review about how best to learn about current legal issues with the city. And so I think that would be a good practice going forward. Miscellaneous is just, you know, all those little logistical things we have to think about. I do want to add just a really basic tutorial on how to search city records in LaserFiche and find information on the city website. I think that could be really helpful for you all. The attachments to this memo, page 13 is the table of contents for the resource guide I create. This actually reflects changes I will make. So as you know, you recently stripped a lot of information about being a council member out of the code and adopted it by resolution. So we will put the resolution in here. Adding in the equity policy is a new change for next year. And then finally, tab 10 will be a motions guide. There has been a lot of discussion on the council about making motions, how to make them and who makes them. And actually, I worked with Councilmember Edon on a summary of motions, and I thought that would be helpful to include. And the last page is the table of contents that was used for the city administration onboarding book. Talks about the strategic plan, the city organization, highlights from all the city departments, internal committees, and boards and commissions. So with that, I will turn it over to questions, suggestions, thoughts, anything you'd like to share with me.
So thank you for coming back again. Kudos to you and the staff. Just want to make a quick comment on the SharePoint. So thank you for coming up. That's a great resource. So you can just like that SharePoint is available to you. That information is there. That's a really good one that I think you guys nailed it. Kathy, please go ahead. Comments, questions.
No, it looks great. Thank you. No questions. Yes, it looks great. No questions.
Cynthia?
Just being the most recent person to go through it, I thought it was a really great orientation. It wasn't too overwhelming, which, you know, the whole list of things looks like it, but I thought you had a good just like cadence of getting all these things done. I remember when you reached out to me, I feel like not too long after I was elected, to just say, like, you know, you got started on some of them, which was super helpful. I love the idea of like some kind of motions practice or like guidelines that just helps them, like, this is what you say, you know, because I that was one thing that I got to the meeting, and luckily Zach was right next to me and was like, say this. I remember that, and that was like, It really meant a lot. Zach, I don't know if I ever told you, but it meant a lot to me in terms of like having a feeling of belonging on that day is just, you know, you've been reaching over and saying, hey, like, you need to like say this. You like wrote it on your packet, so I knew what to say. So that's really important. And even just like giving it to them on a sheet of paper prior to their first meeting so they know what to say and they're not caught off guard. Some additional things that I didn't see on there that I thought were helpful. I met with Rachel Bianchi, and she went over the city's, like, I don't know if it was the equity policy, but she had like a PowerPoint of the different areas that Epic was working on. Maybe that is, but I thought that was super helpful to meet with Rachel and have her give a rundown of that. And then the other thing was, I don't know if this is something that we want to include, but, you know, I was thinking just having information or maybe like pointing them to a certain council member who's particularly involved in some of these like associations, like AW. Sorry, I'm getting the acronyms. The one Kathy is in. those associations, Sound Cities Association, just letting them know like who they are, maybe even setting up meetings with Diana. Or sorry, why am I? I'm blanking.
Diana Dawson.
Diana. Okay, so I was right.
Yep.
I said, okay. But having like an overview of what that is, and I feel like Kathy would be an awesome person to talk about the Association of Washington Cities because of her involvement. So just my two cents. We get so many emails from them.
Yeah, that is good.
Let them know who they are.
There is a section in the onboarding book that talks about the organizations, but having an actual conversation with somebody is a lot different than reading a paragraph. So thank you for the note. I made a note of it.
Go ahead, Kathy.
Yeah, and Deshaun's on the Sound Cities Association. So you're covered for those two, or you would have been. Well, the new people are covered. I got there.
All right. I think you captured it well. I think one of the things that personally that freaks me out is when you get a book that's 400 pages. But if it's a SharePoint, I think I can deal with it, come back. But the one thing I want to make comment is on the meetings. You know, there's still, there are still some folks that I didn't meet. But I think, Laura, this is something that you can work with, some of these directors, like as to some were we just shooting the breeze, some were more organized, right? So for you, I think I didn't know when I was going in there, just asking, you tell me about this department. And we would, you know, talk about, okay, this is what the budget says, and then where do you see the challenge? Like, you know, some basic stuff. I think you really have to work with the new council member as to, do they really want to sit down in a conference room with this individual, or do they want to show and tell and touch stuff, right? So is it helpful for that director to take you to, you know, and show you the different programs, show you what they do, what do they look like? And then if it's in the city hall, they kind of just, you know, very concise, something that, you know, you're involved in. And, or maybe sometimes I think it's helpful if you sit down in some of these meetings. So you know, later on, we can get better at how do we get information, and you can have discussions with the council member. So I think a little bit more formalized in a way, what sort of things does that want a director wanted to get it out to this new council member? And given, you know, some, I don't know, 5 to 10 minute questions or comments, and how do they, and if there's a follow-up too, I think that should be something that you should be involved in coordinating that. So on the city attorney, I believe I was the one that who brought it up, but I have not seen anything from Ms. Sands. That I think she said she was going to put something formalized, and my comment was that I wanted something on the city council process to say you as a new council member have the right to know information that has happened prior. And I don't know if that is going to come up. I don't, like, you know, she was going to put up something, a memo that was more like in that, I don't know if you recall that. I'll pause for a comment here.
I have to check my notes. I don't recall off the top of my head, but I can, I can connect with Carrie this week, and the two of us will put our heads together about that.
Okay, thank you. Other than that, I think this really looks good. And I'm really excited about the SharePoint site. Thank you, Laura, for coming back and wanting to improve this process.
Thank you very much.
Yep. All right. If there are no other questions or comments, we can move on to the last item. It's the committee work plan. So I don't know if this requires a presentation. I don't think it does. So, you know, I believe there are 26 items identified, and then halfway through number 16, it looks like there was a touch point. If it has a date, that means I think they're going to come back again. They did that first part, maybe their second or third part. But there's a lot of complete. If you have some questions, comments, I'll yield it to you guys first, and then I'll go last. Kathy? Okay. Cynthia? Okay, cool. So I wanted to talk about this because I think it's always good to do a check-in. I wanted to do every quarter, but I think I wanted to do around, like, you know, June-ish. We didn't get to it. So one of the things I brought up previously was, prime example is the first item we discussed tonight. It's not in here, right? So how do we capture something that is not previously on the work plan? And at the end of the year, we said, this came up, we talked about it. It's not only the complete ones you see, how are we capturing you know, things that are not predicted previously on the work plan? And at the end of the year, we want to show something like, hey, all these things came out this committee, and this is how they look. So if we can get some sort of a touch point, what that looks like, that would be great.
I'll respond really quickly. When I create these at the beginning of the year, I'm always careful to say these are fluid documents that change quite a bit throughout the year. Things come up that we could not anticipate. Staff capacity can change quite a bit, and things drop off. And so I'm often making updates. And you're right, there isn't really a good way to show things that change. It becomes a little unwieldy when I move things around. Quarters change quite a bit. So I'm definitely open to feedback about how better to reflect changes, but they're definitely fluid documents. And I don't think that, you know, it's a snapshot in time. I try to go through every few months and just kind of look at what was on the agenda, add things that weren't here at the beginning of the year, change the quarters if they need it. So that's my response.
So thank you. I don't think I have other comments. Thank you, Laura, for what you do. I think it would be good to figure out a way at the end of the year that, you know, we talked about more than what was our work on. So, Kathy, I think I see you have your hand on. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, so for example, Laurel, would you, the next time you update this work plan, would you add the early learning facilities onto it?
Okay. Yes.
So you are, as we go along through the year, you are in retroactively adding anything that we talked about. So
yes, I do that.
Really helpful. Right. You can't. So we'll see early learning facilities and city council onboarding. We'll see those two things on there next time.
Yep.
Great. Thank you.
There are no other questions or comments. Or if there are no miscellaneous items, I ask that we adjourn. Okay. Well, thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you.
See you guys later.
See you later. Bye.